Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adwaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamay Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Govinda. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tiyamani. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pachamani. Nirvasesa Srinivadi Bhaskacharya Sutarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sadhujatam Sagana Raghunatham Bitham Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The Skype class on February 7, 2012. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, The Pandavas Retire Timely, Text 25 to 26. Jalokasam jaleyadvan. Mahanto danjaniyasa. Durbalam balino rajan. Mahanto balino mita. Evam balishtar yadubir. Mahadbir itaram bibu. Come in. Yadun yadubir anyonyam.
Can I look? Take a look?
Bhubaran sanjaharaha. Please chant.
Bhubaran balino rajan.
Jalokasam.
Jalokasam.
Of the aquatics.
Of the aquatics.
Jale.
Jale.
In the water.
In the water. Yadvat.
As it is. Mahantaha.
Mahantaha.
The larger one. Adanti. Swallows. Aniyasaha. Smaller ones. Durbalan. The weak. Balinaha.
Balinaha.
The stronger. Rajan. O king. Mahantaha.
Mahantaha.
The strongest.
The strongest.
Balinaha.
Balinaha.
Less strong.
Less strong.
Mitaha.
Mitaha.
In a duel.
In a duel.
Avam.
Avam.
Thus.
Us.
Balistai.
Balistai.
By the strongest.
By the strongest.
Yadubhi.
Yadubhi.
By the descendants of Yadu.
By the descendants of Yadu.
Mahadbhi.
Mahadbhi.
One who has greater strength.
One who has greater strength.
Itaran.
Itaran.
The common ones.
The common ones.
Vibhu.
Vibhu.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yadun.
Yadun.
All the Yadus.
All the Yadus.
Yadubhi.
Yadubhi.
By the Yadus.
By the Yadus.
By the Yadus.
Anyonyam.
Anyonyam.
Among one another.
Among one another.
Bhubaram.
Bhubaram.
The burden of the world.
The burden of the world.
Sanyahara.
Sanyahara.
Has unloaded.
Has unloaded.
Ha.
Ha.
In the past.
In the past.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O King, as in the ocean the bigger and stronger aquatics swallow up the smaller and weaker ones, so also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to lighten the burden of the earth, has engaged the stronger Yadu to kill the weaker, and the bigger Yadu to kill the smaller. Purport. In the material world, the struggle for existence and survival of the fittest are laws, because in the material world there is disparity between conditioned souls due to everyone's desire to lord it over the material resources. This very mentality of lording it over the material nature is the root cause of conditioned life. And to give facility to such imitation lords, the illusory energy of the Lord has created a disparity between conditioned living beings by creating the stronger and the weaker in every species of life. The mentality of lording it over the material nature and the creation has naturally created a disparity, and therefore the law of struggle for existence. In the spiritual world, there is no such disparity, nor is there such a struggle for existence. In the spiritual world, there is no struggle for existence because everyone there exists eternally. There is no disparity because everyone wants to render service to the Supreme Lord, and no one wants to imitate the Lord in becoming the beneficiary. The Lord, being creator of everything, including the living beings, factually is the proprietor and enjoyer of everything that be. But in the material world, by the spell of Maya or illusion, this eternal relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is forgotten, and so the living being is conditioned under the law of struggle for existence and survival of the fittest. Jalo kasam jale yadvan mahanto janchani yasaha dur balam balino rajan mahanto balino mitaha evam balishtir yadubir mahadbir itaran vibhu Yadun yadubir anyonyam bhubaran sanjaharaha. O King, as in the ocean, the bigger and stronger aquatics swallow up the smaller and weaker ones, so also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to lighten the burden of the earth, has engaged the stronger Yadu to kill the weaker, and the bigger Yadu to kill the smaller. So this disparity, this struggle for existence, is not something we like very much, especially when we're on the bottom. So throughout the world now, there are these democratic movements to try to make everybody on an equal level, everyone to have equal facility. So in most of Europe, in America, places like Australia, New Zealand, there's this, in what we call the Western countries of the world particularly, there's this mood towards, let's have a classless society. Let's not have any more disparity. Let's say that there's no differences between people. Or let's just say that the differences that there are between people are simply causes for celebration and are not a matter of being higher and lower, better and worse. That, you know, everyone is just differently abled and everybody can achieve whatever they want and no matter what their particular condition is and what their particular abilities are, and that no one should ever try to lord it over anyone else because they're higher than they are. So that's the general preaching, and we have in the modern Western world, we have a real mood of trying to pretend that there's classlessness. At the same time, we have a very competitive environment where people are also taught to be the strongest and the richest and the most famous and the most this and etc. And where the Western countries of the world are taking a disproportionate share of the world's resources by exploiting the labor and the conditions of people in other parts of the world. So we see that even though there's talk of artificial equality and there's talk that everybody is really just as good as everybody else, still there is a disparity, as Prabhupada says here. There is a stronger and a weaker in every species of life. And because we have a mentality of overlording, the stronger takes advantage of the weaker, to the point of eating the weaker. That even, as says here, like the bigger fish swallow up the little fish. So, of course, in modern human society, this is done in the form of the eating of animals. Or it's done in a more symbolic way, where some big company like Walmart comes and swallows up all the little shops. Right? So this is the what happens when living entities all try to pretend that they're God. Then you have this sort of competition. The actual God, Krishna, he's not in competition with the living entities, and he doesn't have envy of the living entities. In fact, we see that Krishna arranges that the residents of the spiritual world, they have opulences and power almost equal to that of himself. They have forms like himself, and they have the kind of freedom that he has. Krishna is not envious. And even if someone rebels against him and wants to be their own independent God, he says, sure, you know, you can be Brahma, you can be Lord of a universe, you can be Indra, the chief of heaven, you know, you go ahead and be a big chief. I'll give you the power, I'll give you the facility. And this conditioned life where one is misusing one's strength, unlike Krishna, Krishna actually uses his strength and his power to facilitate living entities. But in material conditioned life, as soon as one wants to imitate Krishna, then one misuses one's strength to overlord others. And this, of course, means that it gets taken away. So in one lifetime, one will be powerful, and instead of remembering that the power comes from Krishna and using it accordingly, if one uses it to overlord, then the next lifetime, you lose your power. When you've lost your power, then you may become very pious and pray to God, please give me a position of power. And by your piety, you get some power in the next life. And it goes on and on like this. One goes from the earth planet up to the heavenly planets, down to the animal species, and transmigrating, getting in various positions, sometimes being the powerful and sometimes being the powerless. And we see this even in one life where there'll be a very powerful government and the people revolt and they say, we're going to institute a classless society, we're not going to have any exploitation anymore. And as soon as they get in a position of power, then they also become the exploiters. The reformers become the exploiters. And this is the historical trend Marx was saying, if you just let the workers run the government, they'll treat everyone fairly. But as soon as you put the workers in the government, they were worse exploiters than the capitalists. So this competition for supremacy is basically animal life. If human beings are living just to eat one another up, figuratively, obviously, to try to take from others and try to be the biggest person at everyone else's expense, then that's just like the bigger and stronger fish in the ocean are eating the smaller fish in the ocean. Therefore, Prabhupada, when he lectured on these verses, he made the point that real human life begins with varnashram, where people are not competing between varnas or between ashramas. And he said that everybody has different duties to perform, a different idea of what is righteousness. That what is righteous for a grahasta is unrighteous for a sannyasi and vice versa. What is righteous for a brahmana is unrighteous for a kshatriya and vice versa. Prabhupada talked about how the different sorts of medicines in the medical shop are given to people according to their specific need. And so different rules and regulations, different facility for enjoyment is given to different people according to what they need. Basically, everyone is allowed to enjoy that which they protect. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, just like the husband and wife, they protect and care for each other, so they're also allowed to enjoy each other. The parents care for the children, so they're allowed to take pleasure in the children's activities and broken language and so forth. If you take care of a house, you may also live in it and enjoy it. So the brahmanas who want to enjoy knowledge, they are the protectors of knowledge. The kshatriyas who want to enjoy the honor and adulation of the people, they are protecting the people. The kshatriyas who want to enjoy wealth, they are the protectors of wealth. They have to make sure that wealth is earned in an honest way with respect for the natural resources and the earth and the animals. And the Shudras, who want to enjoy proficiency in the arts and the skills, that sense of accomplishment of talent, they have to protect the arts and the skills and make sure they are used for transcendental purposes. So in this way, everyone can enjoy without envious exploitation, because the whole mood, instead of exploitation, is protection. And the present human society, which is more like animal societies, the brahmanas want to enjoy knowledge, but they do so by exploiting knowledge. They have biased research that's paid for by the business and government. So the brahmanas are producing research that's going to suit the desires of their employers rather than preach the truth. Or they're going to preach whatever truth the government wants, or they're going to preach whatever truth is going to get them personal acclaim. And this way they're distorting the truth. And the kshatriyas, they want to enjoy the adulation and the honor of the people, the prestige of being a righteous person. And instead of protecting the people, they simply manipulate them with so many false promises. Oh, if you elect me, I'll do this and that for you. And of course, the this and that never happens. And then the next election comes up and they say, well, I didn't do it last time, but I'll do it this time. Don't worry. And simply they're milking the people of their money without providing all of the necessary resources for the people. And they're certainly not engaging the people in sacrifice for Vishnu. Just like Vena, he wanted the people to worship him as God. So the modern politicians, the modern government, they're hesitant to engage people in worshiping the real God. They've set up these secular governments, and they're the ones standing on the platforms and receiving the praise of the people without giving it to God. And the Vaishyas, wanting to enjoy the wealth of the earth, they are raping the earth, they are polluting the earth, they are polluting the water, polluting the air, they are torturing the animals. And the Shudras, wanting to enjoy the arts and the skills, they are perverting them and they are using them for the purpose of promoting sensuality and promoting their own name and fame. And in this way, everyone has an exploitive mentality. And with the general exploitive mentality, the classes are also vying for supremacy and they're each trying to exploit the other. The kshatriyas and vaishyas are trying to pay the brahmanas to have true suit their own purposes. The Shudras are trying to control the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas through their greater number and so forth. And then it becomes just like, you know, one fish eating another fish. Now, here with the Yadus killing each other, it looked like on an external basis, Bhubharan, that the Yadus had become a burden to the earth. Because whenever anyone misuses their power, they're simply a burden. It's simply troublesome. I just like Rupa Goswami says, a so-called devotional service without reference to the scriptures is just a disturbance in society. So those who are apparently doing their job, but doing their job without a mood of service, without a mood of protection, without a mood of care, with rather a mood of exploitation. Instead of doing service, they cause a disservice. They cause a disturbance. And therefore, they have to be removed. I mean, even in modern society, we understand that when people are cheaters and exploiters, they have to be removed from their position. And this is what Krishna does, and of course, he's very good at that. He can remove large numbers of people from their bodies simultaneously with so many different means, or he can remove somebody's wealth and power from so many with so many different means. Because what does Krishna say? He says, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. It's actually quite a fascinating verse. The strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. And let's look that up. So this is in the seventh chapter, Balam Balavatam Chaham, Kama Raga Vivarjitam. So Kama and Raga. Kama is desire, and Raga is attachment. So strength, it's not used simply to fulfill one's own desires or out of material attachment. And Prabhupada says something really wonderful in Bhagavatam 1:12:20. He says that the Ishwar above of the Kshatriyas, here we're specifically talking about the Yadus, who were Kshatriyas, is the factual power to give protection in a righteous cause. So that's the use of power. And this desire to be a controller, Ishwara means controller, and Bhava means a mood. So this mood of being a controller was not a mood to exploit, but was a mood to protect. I mean, this is natural. You know, a man naturally wants to protect a woman. A man and woman naturally want to protect the child. It's a natural instinct. And someone who wants to protect large numbers of people, they have this Ishwar above. They want to take a lot of responsibility. So these Yadus, apparently, they were misusing their power. Prabhupada explains that they were such powerful fighters, you know, being directly the sons and the grandsons and the relatives of Krishna, that nobody could defeat them. And therefore, they were causing some trouble on the earth. So the lesson is that even if you're one of Krishna's personal family members, if you're using your strength, if you're using, all of us have some strength, some power. We have some people that compared to we're better than in this way or that way. That anytime someone misuses their position of superiority to exploit, then it will be taken away. Now, of course, that's externally. Krishna is showing this lesson, just like he showed that Bhishma, even Bhishma, if he fights on the wrong side, he's going to be defeated. Even the Yadus, if they're misusing their power, then they're going to be removed. Of course, Prabhupada notes that the Yadus actually weren't misusing their power, that they were great devotees of the Lord. That was just external. And the internal thing here is that Krishna was ready to leave and he wanted to take his family with him. You know, when you're ready to move to a new house, you take your family with you. So how is Krishna going to take his family with him? The Yadus were so powerful that there was nobody who could possibly kill them and defeat them. So Krishna arranged that they killed each other. That was his, how he did this particular Leela. So it's also interesting here with the Yadus that there weren't any demons that could kill them. There was no way that the Yadus could be removed by any external source. They could only be removed by fighting among themselves. And similarly, Prabhupada explains many times that there's really not any way that demons or atheists or materialists can stop the spread of Mahaprabhu's movement. The only way that there can be any difficulty is ourselves, if we're not careful. In this regard, we can meditate on the pastime after the chastisement of Kaliya, when a fire broke out on the banks of the Yamuna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that that fire represents fighting between religious people, fighting between the devotees. And it's interesting that that happens right after Kaliya, because the Kaliya demon represents someone who wants to poison the hearts of the devotees. Actually, the Yamuna is the heart of Vrindavan. And we can think in general water. You know, water is sort of the essence of life. The blood flowing through our veins is mostly water. So Kali is poisoning the heart of the Yamuna. Yamuna Devi felt like there was a big ball of fire inside of her. And Kali was poisoning the cows and the cowherd boys. Basically killed them until Krishna revived them. So this enviousness and criticism of the devotees gives rise to the next lila, where there's fighting among the devotees that causes a fire and destruction. And that can only be remedied by Krishna actually swallowing all the fire. So here we see that we are called upon as devotees, first of all, to rise above using the disparities, the material disparities between us that are the result of our previous karma, as an opportunity to exploit, as an opportunity to harm, as an opportunity to hurt, as an opportunity to take advantage of, but instead use whatever opulence, whatever power, whatever intelligence, whatever position we have as a result of our own activities that is greater than some other people. All of us have something that's better than somebody. To use that as an opportunity to serve. As Prabhupada says here, in the spiritual world, first of all, they don't have to struggle because they're eternal. And also he says, interestingly enough, he said there's no disparity because everyone wants to render service to the Supreme Lord. So that's very interesting because we do talk about hierarchies in the spiritual world. We talk about different rasas being more complete. We talk about certain persons having a position of elders. You know, Nanda Maharaj, and he has an older brother, Upananda, and they're the elders. King Ugrasena is there in the spiritual world. So it may appear that there is a disparity. There's some sort of hierarchy. There's some kind of ranking. There's some sort of classes. One can even say that some of the relationships that the devotees have with Krishna are superior to other relationships. But Prabhupada says there's no disparity because everyone wants to render service. So these differences, although the individual differences are still there, the differences are not cause for distress. Rather, they're simply a celebration of individuality. I mean, this is what we want here. We want here to have differences simply be a cause for various celebration without exploitation. We don't want to just try to homogenize everyone into some big oneness in order to get rid of clashes and difficulty and misunderstanding and exploitation. And at the same time, we find that our individual differences do give rise to exploitation. So we can, even in this world, at least in our own consciousness, we can imbibe the spirit of the spiritual world. That whatever I have, whatever my inclinations, whatever my abilities, they're for service. They're not for exploiting. Oh, if I have more health and energy, then I can give more physical service. If I have more money, then I can render more service like this. If I have more talent, I can render more service like that. And not just service to humanity, I mean, that's nice, but service to Krishna at the center. Prabhupada says no one wants to imitate the Lord in becoming the beneficiary. And there, it's very nice, Prabhupada's referring here to 529. Bhoktaram yagatapa sam sarva lokamaheshram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shanti michchati. One becomes peaceful when one understands that the person meant to enjoy everything is Krishna. Now, of course, in the material world, if we say, oh, so-and-so is meant to enjoy everything that you're doing, then we'll become very fearful because we'll think, well, what will there be for me? You know, if I work hard and I give all my money to somebody else and all the credit goes to someone else and all, you know, I grow the food, I cook the food, and someone else eats all the food, then I won't have any money and I won't have any food. If I build a house and someone else lives in the house, I won't have any food. I won't have any house. But with Krishna, there's also oneness. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. We're not only different from Krishna, we're also one with Krishna. We're part of Krishna. And therefore, when we work for Krishna, we become satisfied. So we don't need to fear that if I make Krishna the beneficiary of service, that I'll be lacking. And we imitate that in this world. A person will think, if I serve my family, if I serve my country, if I serve my society, I'll also be pleased because I'm part of it. But that exists in its perfection in Krishna. So if we want to have our individual differences without there being disparity, without there being exploitation, without there being the ugliness and the envy and the fear of this struggle for existence, that, well, maybe someone else will get more than I will. Maybe someone else will get more money or more a nicer place to live or nicer food or nicer clothes, and therefore I have to exploit that person. Then we can also enter into this mood that I'm eternal. I'm not dependent on any of the material facility in this world. And I can actually live in harmony with differences if I use everything for service. If I give up this false idea, which is so obviously untrue, that I'm the supreme and I'm the controller. It's obvious to any one of us that although I may be better at something than someone, someone else is better than me at that very same thing. You know, how can we say, even if you win the Olympics and you get the gold medal in the Olympics, you're not competing against every single athlete in the world? There still may be another athlete that's better than you. You know, people want to have the world record in something so they can be the best. And then someone else comes along 5 years later and beats their record and they become the best. You know, that I can't be the best. I can't be the top. I can't be the supreme. I can be the supreme in one little area for a short amount of time when compared to a small group of people. You know, I can be, we're talking about fish here, I can be the big fish in a very little pond for a very short time. And then there's going to be a bigger fish that will come along and swallow me, or I'll be put into the big ocean with all the big fish. And the one is just filled with so much anxiety. How am I going to maintain my big fish position? You know, what will I do when another big fish comes? So instead of wasting our time with this useless attempt to be the supreme, you know, I can't satisfy everyone's desires. It's hard enough just to satisfy the desires of a few family members, right? Who of us have a family where all of our family members are satisfied with us forever? You know, we may think, well, I'm just going to be such a good husband, such a good wife, such a good parent that my family members will be completely happy with me at every moment. We don't have that capacity. So to give this up and let Krishna be who he is and let me be who I am. Let the situation be in reality. Prabhupada talks here about illusion, maya, the illusory energy of the Lord, right? That says to us, you're the biggest, you're the greatest. Let us be authentic who we are. It's so much happier, so much freer and more natural and such a relief to be who you are. You know, if you are who you are, then you don't have to waste your energy building, keeping up this false persona all the time. So let me just be a simple servant of Krishna. And let Krishna be the beneficiary. Let me use all of my talents, all of my abilities, all of my money, all of my strength, all of my health, whatever I have, in service, in protection. And then Krishna will take care of me. Whatever I'm taking care of, he will also give me facility to have some taste from that as a servant, to have some enjoyment in his pleasure, to have some enjoyment in things going well. And therefore, even though we're different, and even though some of us may have to take a position of authority in this or that for this amount of time, still the mood is of cooperation and service. And just like if you're working on some project, you're working on a festival, so one person may take a leading role, another person may take a subordinate role, but that's just for management. We all know we're working together as a team. And it's such a satisfying thing to work together as a team to please Krishna. And to appreciate others. To appreciate what other talents people have. Not to envy them. Not to try to take from them. With faith that Krishna is going to give me everything I need. In fact, I already have everything I need. Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam. Purnam Purnam Eva Shite. We are already complete. We have come from the complete and we are also complete. This concept that I am lacking something that needs to be fulfilled by something outside of myself is an illusion. So everything that I need, I already have. I am indestructible. I cannot die. I cannot be hurt. I cannot be damaged. Whatever talents I have, they're meant to employ in the service of the Lord, in a mood of cooperation with others, rather than envy and exploitation. And if we do that, then we will live in the spiritual world, even in this body, even in this life. We will experience life in the spiritual world. And if we don't do that, then our talents, our money, our position will be taken away, even as they were taken away from Krishna's own dear family. Again, become a mouse. So this is our choice. How do I use what I have? As a servant or as an exploiter? If I'm an exploiter and swallowing the little fish, another big fish is going to come along and swallow me. Krishna will take away my position, my power, my wealth, whatever it is. And if I use everything to glorify Krishna without envy, in cooperation rather than supremacy, let Krishna be the supreme controller, then I'll actually be happy and peaceful, no matter what reverses there may be. So we can stop here. And if there's any questions or comments.
I'll make a comment. It seems that maybe there is some room for desiring to be the best at something, as long as it's for Krishna's pleasure. Like if someone is thinking, I want to be the biggest book distributor, or the best pujari to dress the deities more beautifully than they've ever been dressed before. As long as false ego doesn't contaminate that, we're truly thinking for Krishna's pleasure. Just like in the spiritual world, the copper boys would compete with Krishna and try to win this game, be the fastest to run here, the fastest to run there, or do this or do that. But ultimately, the purpose of their competition is Krishna's pleasure.
Oh, definitely. That's a very nice comment. And they're not thinking of the best in order to overlord somebody. It's more inspiration. Just like we may read some story or hear some story about somebody who really was dedicated and serious and accomplished something wonderful, and we get inspired and think, well, I'd like to do that too. So that kind of competition based on inspiration, where I actually admire rather than envy the other person, and it's not that I want to do better than them to put them down, but rather, I want to do better because I'm inspired by them. and I'm appreciating them. And in that mood, if that person sees me do better, then they'll also feel excited. They'll also feel inspired, and then they'll want to do better.
So then I'll ask a question. You mentioned that the only thing that could destroy our movement would be from within. That seems like a great nemesis. And it's so true. We saw in the Gaudiya that as soon as they built the ashrams and the temples, the devotees were fighting over who gets this room and who gets that room. Bhakti Siddhanta became so disgusted, he said, you know, sell the marble and print books, build the printing presses. How do we protect ourselves? It seems like it's so much. If we look at the history of ISKCON, we see that it's, you know, it's been a pandemic problem, and it's almost in our blood to take advantage or to exploit, to use our power improperly. How do we protect ourselves against this?
All right, well, how do we protect ourselves from being exploiters and become servants? I think that's the whole process. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to turn ourselves from exploiters to servants. It's one reason we have the association of each other, so we can remind each other of that. You know, of course that's going to be our tendency. We've been doing it for a very long time. But it's also our original position is to be Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada gives the example of a car that is stalled and people are pushing the car until the car can start again. So the idea of Vaidhi Bhakti is that you have the guru and the other devotees, they're giving the great acharyas, the shastra, they're giving us a push to come back to our natural position. So in one sense, being an exploiter is a long-time habit and appears like our default value, but actually, being a servant is our default value. Our natural position is to be a servant. So as we practice it, and as we strive for it, then it will naturally start to manifest. It's who we are.
Thanks. Yeah. So true.
I was just going to say, when I was a couple of years ago, when I was really into multi-level marketing, one thing I really noticed in myself was even in their model is that everybody wins.
Mm-hmm.
But that association, there's so much envy, you know, of one another. And amongst the association of devotees, the difference between a materialist and one who is a devotee is so remarkable. Sometimes we just forget it because we're in the association of devotees, you know, most of the time. But boy, when you start associating with materialistic people, it's really, you know, dog eats dog. When fish eats the little fish, it's terrible.
Yeah, that's nice that you say that. I had the same experience when I did my internship for my degree, that I could see that among the non-devotees, among materialistic people, they don't even have a theoretical concept of these things. They don't even have any concept that the way they're acting may be exploitive and it may be based on envy. So even if we're not acting the right way, at least we know we should be acting the right way. And it's a huge difference in our behavior with each other.
Nice point.
Prabhu, this is the last time Mother Earth.
Thank you very much for the talk. class and for the other classes at this level of your visitor or talk. My question is slightly unrelated to the class directly, but we know in the spiritual world there are relationships, so there are couples. But we also know that there is no procreation as we know on this earth in terms of the act of procreation. So is there a pastime of bringing up children, and how does that happen?
No, there's no birth in the spiritual world. So people have their eternal family relationships, but there's no birth and growth.
Okay.
There's a sense of being, this is my eternal child. Yes.
I wanted to ask you a question one of my kids asked me the other day in sort of a challenging mood, but I did have to have an answer for him, and I didn't. So I was wondering if you might be able to help me out. In the spiritual world, there's grass, and there are cows. And the coward boys take the cows grazing. So what do they eat, and how does that work?
Well, I don't think we can understand eating at all in the spiritual world, because we're talking about bodies that don't have any need for digestion. You know, whenever we're thinking about something like eating or cooking, we really can't conceive of it at all. Obviously, it's some sort of relationship between the food and the person's eating, but it's not an eating process like we're accustomed to here. I mean, I don't think in general that we can understand the nature of things in the spiritual world that way, because we're looking at a situation where there's no time and there's no space. You know, remember that material time and space are creations of illusion. The first aspect of the creation of illusion is time. And the first of the great material elements is space. So we're thinking of everything in terms of time and space, and we're thinking in terms of everything, you know, this food concept here. Food is always one living entity is eating another. I mean, even if you're a vegetarian, you're eating some body, some part of the body of another living being. You know, it's pretty hard to eat in such a way that you're not taking anything. You know, even if you just eat the fruit from the tree, but that fruit was designed to be the moisture and the food for the seed. So it's very, very difficult even to eat without taking from something. But in the spiritual world, 1 + 1 = 1, 1 - 1 = 1. There's no exploitation. There's no death. There's no change from one thing into another. So we really can't, from our material perspective, we really can't understand things which are the prototype of things here, but are very different. I mean, just like Srila Prabhupada told us so many times about Krishna's relationship with the gopis, that it's the original form of sexuality, but yet it's not anything like material sexual relationships at all. He said, like gold and iron are both metals, but they're of a very different quality. So many people look at Krishna's relationship with the gopis and think, oh, I know what that is. That's just like, you know, Joe's relationship with Sally. But it isn't. And in the same way, we can look at Krishna eating sweet balls and Madhu Mangal eating laddus and think, oh, I know what that is. I eat a laddu and it's like that. But it isn't. It's the origin of which what we're doing is just a perversion. I mean, it's just like people in a video game, they can be eating food in the video game. But that eating of the food of the characters in the video game is radically different from the eating of food by, persons in the material world. It's of a very different quality. It's not the same thing isn't going on. You know, when the video game character is eating the food, it's not really energizing the body of that video game character. So it's all we can say is that all the activities that go on here and all of the relationships that go on here exist there in their original and perfected form. And that what we're dealing with here is a reflection, it's a perversion, it's a mock, it's like a puppet show or something. It doesn't represent actual reality. And if we start, you know, if you start from what the puppets are doing, or you start from what the computer game characters are doing, and then try to go from there to reality as we know it in this world, you won't understand it. And in the same way, if you try to just start from the reality in this world and project like that on the original form, it doesn't work. You know, you look in a reflection in the mirror and you try to understand the original things that are being reflected. How well are you going to be able to understand them? It's a limited. Well, we can explain the principles. We can say, in principle, nothing there is ever created or destroyed. There's no death. No living entity is having to subsist on another. There's, like here, only one person can be in one space at one time, and there isn't a concept of space like that. Two living entities and unlimited living entities can be in the same space at the same time. I mean, factually, even in this world, that is also happening. But it's just the covering of illusion is that we don't perceive things that way. So even in this world, Krishna is in every atom and all the universe is within Krishna. So time and space, as we think of it, are simply they're within our mentality. And one who gets a higher consciousness sees even this world differently, what to speak of our original spiritual form. So I know that's not a kind of answer in one sense, but it is the only answer. That what we use with words and material concepts to describe the spiritual world falls far short of the actual reality. And I think that that's one reason why most religious systems in the world don't describe the spiritual world. They don't describe the form of God. They don't describe the activities of God, because people just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to them. They put on it a material conception and try to understand it from their material point of view. And Srila Prabhupada's done something very interesting with taking these very high descriptions, which are, and a very high mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, which is really, since the beginning of time, this knowledge is only revealed to persons who are in a very high level of spiritual awareness already. And he's making it available to the general public, along with explanations of philosophy, so that people are not so likely to make these misunderstandings.
Mataji?
Yes?
I have one question, and I really appreciate your class. Thank you very much. And especially every time the point comes on Varnashram, you always make it so clear that according to nature, there is a natural hierarchy. So there is a difference in people's nature, work, and obviously, I'm assuming, of course, relationship. Yet, in ISKCON and as Vaishnav, we are always taught that the soul is one, Jiva is one, and there is equality, there isn't any difference. So how can we, including the women, the soul of the women, so how can we reconcile this simultaneously difference in Varnashram, yet equality in Vaishnavism?
Well, if we look at external manifestation, the external manifestation is that every Vaishnava has a total equal right and ability to perform any of the 9 processes of devotional service. Now, we may restrict some sort of services according to one's level of realization, but it's not restricted according to the body. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami was sitting on the Vyasasan, even though his father and guru, Srila Vyasadeva, even though Narada Muni was in the audience, even though the people in the audience were older than he was and so forth, even though he had not gone through any kind of formal diksha, and they had, still on the platform of the soul, he was considered to be in a realized position. So anybody can chant Hare Krishna, anybody can hear about Krishna, anyone can remember Krishna, anyone can serve the deity. That doesn't matter whether you're male or female, or whether you're brown or green or purple, or whether you're short or whether you're tall, or you're fat or you're thin, or you're ugly or you're beautiful, or it just doesn't matter, or whether you come from Brazil or you come from Kenya or you come from China. Then when it comes to the activities, Prabhupada explains this in Bhagavad Gita 9:30, but a lot of other places, that we have two duties. As long as we're not liberated from the modes of nature, we also have conditional duties. So the nine processes are constitutional, and the other duties are conditional. They have to do with the kind of body and mind that we have. So a child's business is to go to school and to study. You know, you can't say to a three-year-old child, get married and have children. They don't have the right body for it. For them, it's going to school, right? And when someone's old, you can't tell them to get married and have children. You know, when you're 80 years old, you don't have the right body for that either. And you can't tell someone who's 80 years old, okay, you should go to work. They don't have the right body for that either. So those sort of things are according to the body. When you're a child, you go to school. When you're in youth, you get married. When you hit middle age, you retire. When you hit old age, you become renounced. So that's a question of the body. And what kind of work you do is a question of the body and the mind. And the way that that's equal is that Krishna equally accepts all of that service. Krishna doesn't accept one of those services as being superior to the other. If you're a president of a country, or you're a sweeper in the street, or you're a student in school, or you're a cook, or whatever you are, if you're also engaged in the nine processes of devotional service, and you're offering your conditional work to Krishna, then to Krishna it all has equal value. One is not higher than the other. And it's simply a matter of taking our external roles according to what's fitting our body and mind at this particular life and at this particular time in our life. So we have both of those duties. We have our eternal spiritual duties, which we may be doing in a form of sadhana, and then we have our bodily and mental duties, which change from one life to another and also change during our life. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.